Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics.
Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Carl Carlson.
And this is Fred Schenkler. Hey, Carl.
Hey, Fred.
What have you been reading lately? You came up with a really clever idea here of a topic.
Yeah, we live in a culture, all of us. I mean, you live in a community culture, your business has a culture. So let's talk about reliability culture. What is the culture of your company as a listener on the subject of reliability? Is it positive, negative? What is acceptable? How do things get done? There's so much to this subject, and I'm very fascinated on what one does. What do you do when you're confronted with a culture that pushes back, that doesn't want to get things done that you think needs to get done, and is not supportive?
Well, this is a matter of what engineering field you're in or what management field you're in. There's going to be resistance to change, no matter what. Change management is not unique to reliability engineering. So if you want to do HALT, nobody understands why or how or what's that got to do with anything. You're going to get pushback. If you decide that we're going to not eat in the cafeteria anymore, we're going to go across the street to a restaurant, there's going to be pushback. It doesn't matter. I think that's a piece that you learn pretty quickly. As soon as you make a proposal to three people, you'll get three different pushbacks. And it's just innate in human. What do you mean we can't improve this process? You know, and if we do this, oh, now I have to walk all the way over here twice a day. Oh, it's horrible. I think that's just built in. In the reliability culture within an organization is a subset of the overall organizational culture. Are you focused on time to market? Are you focused on cost reduction? Are you focused on, you know, cool new features and all that stuff, and you know, or whatever it is? Is it shareholder value or is it customer satisfaction? I find that it's rarely both for some reason. So it's a lot of things get driven in some organizations from top down. This is the way we do stuff, and this is what's important, and I'm going to check. It's very top down, almost militaristic driven, right? Yeah. When I was in the Army, that gives you the framework, but you can't just follow the strict essence of the order. You have to be adaptable, agile, inventive, creative, everything else in order to complete the mission. So you're not absolved of thinking if you're being told, go do reliability plan and make it happen. Well, to actually make it useful takes a whole lot more work than just writing down a handful of tests and a plan and handing it in. So I think the culture part is, you know, I think you phrased it exactly right. It's this is the way we do things here. And when it's concerning reliability, it could range from it's completely ignored to it's built into every asset, every decision in the organization. Usually it's somewhere in between.
Yeah, we've talked a lot about maturity matrix, and just to give it 30 seconds, every organization from a reliability standpoint is somewhere on a maturity matrix where you could start off with there is nothing happening and nobody's interested in reliability.
Yeah, it's characterized by customers always complain, don't worry about it.
Yeah, customers complain, and so you basically the customer is the problem, that kind of thing.
Right.
That'd be a really low end. And at the higher end is the design teams, the manufacturing teams, all understand reliability very well. And they achieve reliability as part of their job. In other words, they built into the engineering process are the things that achieve reliability in design, reliability in manufacturing. And And the management supports that and is very vision oriented there. That'd be the other end, and mm-hmm. somewhere in between. And part of the reliability job is to move the organization along that maturity matrix so they become more mature. We've talked about working yourself out of a job, so to speak.
Right. Where
the design engineer knows and understands it so well that they design for reliability. What I'm interested in is, what do you do as a reliability engineer? You say you come in, you've got experience, you know, think you know what needs to be done, and you come into an organization that's kind of low on the lower end mm-hmm. of the maturity matrix. And so you say, okay, we need to do these reliability programs and projects and FMEAs and accelerated testing. And they say, yeah, we don't have any budget for that, or very often.
Yeah, you're dreaming, dude.
Yeah. And how do you bring about the change? How do you face that, I'll say, negativity in a rational way that moves the dial and helps moves the culture in the right place or up the maturity matrix? Mm-hmm. What are your words of wisdom or thoughts on how you go about that?
There are two things I fall back on, and it's not just reliability work in creating an improvement in maturity of a reliability program or organization. If I want any change to occur, whether like when I was a manufacturing engineer, we're proposing a change in how we process something so we get lower scrap on it. The production folks, you know, some cared about scrap. They understood that that's bad. It's going to landfill. It costs money and blah, blah, blah. They still get paid the same, right? They still have the same hours. They still get paid. It's not connected to a bigger picture at all. Yet, how about if I take out a lot of this scrap, so now you don't have to deal with it. You don't have to go find a place to fit it in the dumpster outside. You don't have to haul it around. You have one less task, or less, one less onerous task to do. And then this operator, she said, oh, well, I like that idea. I'll support it now. So part of it is, what's in it for them? And you might know that doing this accelerated life test or this process capability analysis or whatever would be the best thing ever. Yet, if they don't get that, if there's no benefit to them, if there's no connection to how their life will be better because of it, then you're going to get just generic change management resistance type stuff.
So one thing to do, and just to summarize it, is you need to get their attention in some positive way or some illustrative way, and you have to understand what their needs are and talk in their language.
Well, yeah, no, I was sitting on an extruder that was making the base polymer mix that we use for just another process later, and it was a dusty, dirty job, and you had to wear a bunny suit just because of the powders and dust that was generated by this whole process. And I sat there for 3 days and talked to the operator and watched what they're doing and asked lots of questions when he had a chance to talk about what he's doing. And it evolved into, well, what parts are the worst part? What are the parts that you wish would just go away, would make your life better? And I may not have phrased it that way, but it became, if I could make that change, it might not have been the most important thing in the overall organization, then I could go back to him and say, you know, how about we take a look at this part over here, which I knew was important to the business. What are your ideas on this? And so it was building trust, building, you know, credibility, doing those kinds of things, building a champion. And so when I'm working with a client, there's usually within a group of 20 people, there's two or three that really do understand that reliability needs improvement, and they just don't know what to do. And so find them as your advocates and help them become better at explaining what needs to change. And so they have the confidence of what they're talking about and what they're recommending. I come in as an outside consultant. I can say, you need to do X, Y, and Z. It may or may not happen, but it'll be gone shortly after I get on the plane and go back home. Whereas if it's built through internal advocates or internal champions that understand innately that this is important, and then you enable them to be effective at that, the change is much more sticky then, I find, and it's much more likely to hang around. But what was in for them was that they recognized the problem. They needed some extra help to be able to articulate it and feel confident with the recommendations. That I could do easily. But what they got was prestige. They got recognized as identifying a problem and solving it. And they got the benefit of it.
You're making them look good.
Well, I'm making them better at what they do.
Yeah, exactly. And you're not taking the credit. You don't have to take the credit yourself. You don't have to.
My pay doesn't change because of that. Now, some projects I wish I did have a 10% net on the change, but that doesn't always work.
So we have two steps so far here. One is get the attention of management, talk in their terms, connect with them, find out what their needs are.
Mm-hmm.
And another one is, and I'll sort of characterize it in my own words, but get going on some project that it may not be the biggest project in the world or the most important thing in the world, but it's also not trivial. It's something that's needed.
Mm-hmm.
That you can get your arms around and work with a champion if you can select one and find one that helps you out. But use your reliability expertise, and I would use the reliability process, including gap analysis and tool selection, that type of thing. But basically, work on improving that product in some way. And then lastly would be, get a success and make sure that success is real and that people get credit for it and they can see the value of it. I look at it as, remember Stewart's cycle?
Mm-hmm.
PDCA, plan, do, check, act.
Yeah.
That's kind of the way I'm seeing here is if you come in to an organization and you're a reliability engineer, you can follow the PDCA but you want to work on something that really helps your management, that connects with them, gets their attention. You want to use your reliability process. And then once you've done it, you want to get success in it and then expand it and then do it again.
Yeah, you're still talking about this as a top-down process. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at it as if you want to implement change, unless you're Lee Iacocca, and in total command of your organization, you're not going to affect anything, right? You just don't have the authority and the will to do it. And even then, it wasn't 100% everybody doing what he said. So I find it way more effective. And reliability engineers that just get assigned into it, even if you've got great education and everything else, is I agree that you got to talk to management, understand the business and the direction and focus and so on. But I think to really affect change, it has to be very personal. It's not that I choose a champion, is they become evident and then you enable them. So it's more a support role. And asking those right questions is like in testing. It's like, why are you doing this? Let's think that through, right? Of all the 10 things you're doing, which one is the most vital for a key decision, $1 million decision, for example? And let's think through this. Why are we doing what we're doing and which one to focus on? And if you have trouble getting sample sizes, well, stop asking for samples. And they look at me like, what? Says, instead, go find a decision that's so important, they'll give you as many samples as you want. But if it's not supported, you can't get there. So it's enabling people the champions almost always exist in an organization. It's just getting them in gear, basically.
I'm going to agree that it's not top down.
Right.
I'm going to agree with you there. You can't go into an org, you can't work in the organization with the idea that you have to influence the top down and get support from everybody. You have to get some support, but that could be at the local level. It could be building networks. But the point is, this is the thought that comes to mind when you're talking, Fred, is I know you do this, and the you have to have the attitude that it can get done.
Oh, there's that. Yeah. 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 And that's where I find trying to convince somebody that really doesn't believe it can be done at all is a waste of time. Convincing somebody to help you that would like it to happen and maybe wants it to happen, and then you can help them see how it can happen. That's a whole lot easier. You need the willing to start the change process.
That's a really good part of this process is you don't, when you run into a barrier, like somebody says, oh, can't do that. Don't give up.
No, go find somebody else.
Go find somebody else. Team. Find some way to get it done. The point is find a way to be successful to get your project accomplished.
Well, there's two parts to that success though, Carl. One of them is to build trust. So even just low-hanging fruit or quick, easy wins, or even things that aren't even related to the reliability program, is building the trust, especially if you're hired into the organization. Building trust one step at a time involves actually helping other people solve their problems, whatever it is. And then they're much more likely to, much less resistance to recommendations you make.
I will put in the show notes a link to the reliability maturity matrix. Mm-hmm. And I think what we're talking about is how can you help an organization move up the maturity matrix? That's like a goal.
Yeah.
That's fantastic if you can do it.
That brings up a really key point though, Carl, is that as you look at an organization and you're looking at what's important, what's not, who needs what done, you start the gap analysis and selecting tools is if they don't have any statistical thinking or processes already in play, they don't know what a hypothesis from a control chart, going in and recommending they do the high-end DOE simulation type stuff is just a non-starter. You got to meet them where they are, build on their strengths, improve the capabilities on the other ones from where they are. The smaller the step you make in recommending a change, the less resistance you get.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people miss that. I've seen that. This is probably why I don't like PhDs too much, is they'll come in and go, I'm a PhD. I've been studying this for 10 years now. You need to do blah, blah, blah. And they'll all look at them like, but we don't have a linear accelerator to bombard this with neutrons. Sorry.
Well, so there's a lot of thoughts going through my head here, Deep. So you want to, when you're starting out, obviously you want to move the organization along the maturity matrix. That's pretty general. And yes, you want to work within the resources that are available. So you don't want to start at Taguchi methods if no one's ever and trained in it, that kind of thing.
Right.
And so you got to work within the resources that are there. So this is going to be a progression. Your first year might be certain type projects that can get done. But during that first year, you might be building the resources or finding
credibility.
Credibility. And so that when you get to the next year, you can do more and things like that. So you always want to keep an eye on the future as well as work in the present. If you have a good attitude, like we're talking about, where things can get done, roadblocks can be moved around, or you can find ways around them, that kind of thing. You want to avoid the type of thinking that says, okay, we got a roadblock, it can't get done. And that's the wrong attitude. You want to keep the attitude that it can be accomplished and then find ways to make it happen.
Yep.
That's pretty general. Where I was going with this is follow the, we'll call it the reliability process of knowing where you're going, what the organization wants to achieve, find a project that helps them do that, understand what the gaps are, and then select tools to accomplish that are within the resources that you have. And if you can get some wins on doing that, gain credibility, and the next time around, it's going to be a lot easier.
A lot easier. And then what I found from experience is that if one program has success and their field performance is better or their cost is better or whatever it is, their metrics that there's important to them improves, and they can link it to that, oh, this is because we executed this reliability plan and we made these strides forward, is don't let that go to waste. Make sure everybody knows about how valuable that change was. There's that step. But then also is that the sister organization is make sure they know about it. And saying, yes, you know, you could do this too. You know, these folks aren't any different than you, but you will get not invented here. That's another form of resistance. No, they only deal with consumer products. We deal with industrial products. All right. Do your customers complain that it doesn't work? You know, or whatever, you can fix this. And here's the process. And so a little bit of healthy competition among the different divisions or product lines or groups, goes a long way. So build up, it's not just get a success, is advertise that success, promote that success, give credit to the people that made it happen and make them the champions, give them the parking spot in front of the front door, you know, that kind of stuff. To really capitalize on it. Because once you get started and you start making a difference, I think one of the traps that happens is many reliability folks feel that, well, I can't start another project because I'm already working full time with this group. Well, that's I can't get it done attitude. I need to create 2-3 champions here that can keep this program going and I can just oversee it or coach, which is a much lower effort on my side. I don't have to do all the analysis. I don't have to do all the planning or all the interviews, the gap analysis. These folks can do it with a little bit of assistance. And now I can go focus on the next group and get them spun up. And then it's that work yourself out of a job thing. Don't worry. Most organizations will take about 20 or 30 years for you to make a full change. So it's self-supporting. So
yes. Let me share a story on this. Back when I was starting out in a reliability group, managing a reliability group, I had reliability engineers. And we were putting in place FMEAs where they were needed, where they're not needed. And some of the reliability engineers would come back and say, well, they tell me it's impossible to get people to show up to meetings. So they hold the FMEA meeting and people don't show up. I said, okay, I started asking questions. Mm-hmm. What are you doing an FMEA on? Turns out, he's trying to get an FMEA done on something that wasn't really needed. And of course, people are not going to show up at that. Yeah. Next thing is, what's your procedure? How are you going about it? And of course, the person wasn't well enough trained. And so I basically coached people that you need to know what you're doing so you don't waste people's time. They're more likely to show up to meetings if you don't waste time. And just went about it from a viewpoint of this can get done, but you have to have a product. You have to add value. What's being done? You have to work on the vital few areas that are most important, not on everything. And you will get support if you are helping people genuinely accomplish their goal. That was the other thing I would tell the reliability engineers. People want a failure-free product. They really do. They get up in the morning. They don't want failures. And you can help them achieve a failure-free product, but you have to work in the direction of genuine help. And so just some coaching along that line really helped instigate and make and get the traction on FMEA being properly done, but only doing it where it was needed and only doing it when it was adding value.
Yeah. And that goes with any of the tools or recommendations. If it doesn't have a clear path to adding value, and if it's only one operator to make their job a little bit better, that's fine. But it adds value. It makes a difference. And then it's stepping stone to working with the entire program to really drop the failure rate in the field or improve customer satisfaction or, you know, all the good things that happen when we create a highly reliable product. And yeah, there's a whole lot more than 20 minutes can cover on this, you know, Carl.
I know. Well, if you're a listener, I'd be very interested in hearing what you run into. Do you run into negativity when you're trying to accomplish your job? Do you have a culture of things can get done or things can't be done? How do you go about addressing it? And what would you like to know more about that would help you as a listener on the subject?
Yeah, I always find it hard, Carl, to advocate for the skunk works. And, you know, if your boss says don't do it, just go do it anyway, and then show them the benefit. I've done that a few times. And depending on your situation and boss, you may want to take that risk into account a little more than I did. But there have been times when it's worked out great, and there's other times it didn't work at all. And, you know, you take two steps back at that point and start over again.
I'd rather take the risk. Call it a calculated risk, in other words.
Yeah, yeah. You got to assess that for yourself, you know. You got to assess that for yourself and how comfortable you are with your position and so on. And yet I've benefited greatly from doing that. Even the ones that didn't work, learned a lot and moved forward on it. Yet organizations can change. The reliability culture can improve. And both Carl and I have seen it in numerous circumstances and with our clients and so on. So you can make a difference wherever you sit in the organization. And it takes work. It takes energy. Sometimes it's very frustrating. But let us know. How's it going? What barriers are you seeing? What obstacles? Any clever ways if you've gotten around some of the issues that we've talked about or others that you know about? We'd love to hear from you. Head over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. And there's a couple of ways to get in touch with us. Carl and I and the other hosts are available through LinkedIn and our about pages. You know, Carl, I just had the thought is when I say, you know, you and I and the other hosts is every now and then I think, well, I should name all the other hosts. And then I like, that would be a quiz because I think I got like, we have like 6 or 7 people now.
Yes, indeed. That would be a good quiz. And let me just leave it with this. Don't, as a listener, don't listen to people that say things can't get done.
Yeah.
Just keep that in mind. I mean, it can be so defeating sometimes when people, and you can get into a critical mass of an organization where things can't get done, and then it becomes true. It's like the Big Million principle. And you can look that one up. Anybody could look that up as a principle. But the point is, if you think things can't get done, you're probably right. And if you think things can get done, you're also right.
Yeah, that was, I want to say Carnegie or Ford, or there was somebody in that late 1800s, early 1900s that I attribute that quote to.
I should have got the attribution. I'll look for that in the show notes.
All right, there you go. All right. Okay. You got 2 action items out of this one, Carl.
I do.
Yeah, amazing. All right. Well, we'll do the editing. Take care of it. All right. Thanks, Carl. We'll talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.